Anderson. Jake Turner. James Franco. Nancy Cartmill.
Jim Turner's here.
Okay. Kelly Sonia.
Here.
Jim Morgan. Beth Thompson. Chad Nelson.
Here.
Jason Stevens.
Here.
Gianna Holliday. Patrick Lyden.
Here.
Bill Dingus. Gary Porter. Ralph Klein. Katrina Keith. Ken Atkins.
Here.
Robert Paisley. Don Bias. Shane Dillon. Paul Davis.
Here.
Derek Chaney. Nikki Smith. Stephen Gilmore. Michelle Grubb.
Here.
Michael Gracie. Robert Carpenter.
Here.
Ron Simpson.
Here.
Bill Biggs. Ron Fields.
Here.
Andy Skidmore. Bert White. Rick Bailey. Robert Pennington. Barry Keller. Elwood Penn. Rob Watson. Jack Marchbanks. Max Francis. Scott Thompson. Greg Thomas. Thomas Witt.
Here.
Matt Vance. Brent Brer.
Thank you, sir. At this time, we have the approval of minutes from the previous meeting, March 1st, 2019, and distributed.
Make a motion, we read and read.
Guys, Mayor Keith here.
Okay, what I'll do is go through the financial statements briefly for the year ended June 30, 2018. On page 6, the independent auditor's report, even though Sullivan Webb makes a consistent in filing financial statements this year, prepared with financial statement format. My responsibility to call to your attention the responsibility to understand the second paragraph of the independent auditor's report. These financial statements and the contents therein are the representation of the organization and the responsibility of management. It's the independent auditor's responsibility to opine on these financial statements and their fair presentation. Basically, there are three types of auditor's reports. There's the unqualified report, which is basically a clean bill of health. There's the qualified report, which says that the financial statements present fairly in all material respects, except for, and there would be some qualifying language. And the third type of report, of course, is worst one, or the adverse report, states that the financial statements do not present fairly in all material respects, and it will go on with the language as to why they do not present fairly. The independent auditor's report on the financial statements that we're speaking of today for the year ended June 30, 2018, on page 7, the most important paragraph at the very top of the page states that, in our opinion, the financial statements present fairly in all material respects the financial position and results of operations of the entity for the year ended June 30, 2018. So this is the unqualified report, the first one that I spoke of, which is the highest level of reporting and the best report. Not qualified, not adverse. So the independent auditor's report on page 7 is an unqualified report. Page 8 is a statement of net position or the balance sheet of the organization. Basically, it strikes the health of the organization at a point in time, and that point in time being the close of business as of the 2018. If you look at the top portion of financial statements, total assets, in 2018, 435,000 compared to 403,000 in the prior year. It moved back up in the line item. We'll note that the increase in the accounts receivable of the four grants. The next section of that is related to GASB 68 and GASB 75, which is the new accounting for pension plans and OTAS for other post-employment benefits, which in this case is the medical benefits after employment. And I won't go into that in detail. Mainly those numbers are computed by the actuaries, and of course actuaries are worse than accountants. They take these numbers and stir them up and then spit them out and expect people to understand. Look at the liability side of that statement. Compare the 472,000 to the 602,000 in the prior year. So the liability decreased, which is a good position to be in. Mainly the big decrease there was the $10,000 in the unearned revenue. The decrease in some of those other line items, again, the net pension liability. So if you drop to the bottom of that page, the net position of the organization, the net position is 56,000. Basically, that number is the result of deducting the liabilities from the assets to a positive number of 56,000. If you'll note, in the prior year, it was a negative 23,000. So this year, it is going in the right direction. The next page, page 10, is the statement of activities, or the statement of revenues, and the statement of expenses. Looking in the 2018 column, you'll see the total revenues is $1,300,000 compared to $1,098,000 of the prior year. So basically, we had an increase in revenue of $200,000. That increase, basically, if you'll go back up and look at the individual line items, is an increase in the grant revenue, which is both from the largest line item, but the largest increase is from Ohio, and then there was an increase in the from the state of West Virginia. If revenue increases from grants, then you would expect the expense to increase. Basically, it did in this situation. And the main increase in the expense is the consulting service. So if you take the total expenses, $1,220,000, subtract that from the $1,300,000, you'll end up with the $79,000 change in position or the excess of revenue over expense. Take that and combine it with the beginning of the year deficit of $23,000, we end up with that net position of $56,000. Page 11, cash flows, and basically this reports where the cash came from and where it went. So if you look at that statement, the cash flow goes to a negative position, a negative $24,000, so that should immediately the question of why do we have negative cash flow? But in this situation, it is not a problem. If you look at the line items, you had cash received from the grants of $1,060,000, and on down through there. And basically, the reason that it went negative was the cash paid for employees and for other services. Page 12 is basically that same information in long form. And I will not go through that. Page 13 through page 40 are the required disclosure notes for the financial statements. And I know it's a disappointment, but I will not go through those in detail. Page 41 is the independent auditor's report on internal control over financial reporting and other compliance matters. Basically, the most important language of this report is on page 42. The last sentence of the first paragraph, the results of our test disclosed no instances of noncompliance or other matters that are required to be reported under government auditing standards. Had there been issues of noncompliance with the grant contract, then we would have been required to report those here. Page 43 is the independent auditor's report on compliance for major programs. Since the organization does spend more than 7.5 and the key word is spend, since the organization did spend $750,000 in government grant revenue, you're required to be brought to another level or a higher level of examination and compliance, and that's basically what this report is on page 43 and 44. Again, on page 44, if you look at the second paragraph, the opinion on each major program, it states that in our opinion, the organization complied in all material respects with the types of compliance requirements referred to above and could have a direct and material effect on each of the major programs. The next section of that is the report on internal control and compliance for those major programs. Again, this is a separate report to a higher level of service, so you spent the $750,000 in governmental funds. So if you look down to the very next to the last paragraph on that page, next to the last sentence, we did not identify any deficiencies in internal control over supplies that we consider to be material weakness. Now, material weaknesses is a defined term, which had there been any material weaknesses in internal control over the accounting system or over the compliance system for the expenditure of those federal funds, then we would have been required to report that here. Examples of not invoices not being approved, bank reconciliations not being done in a timely manner, things of that nature, or compliance requirements of the grant not being complied with, and that would have been reported here. Page 46 is a short form of everything that I have gone over so far, and basically it outlines everything that I have talked about. I'll be glad to answer any questions if you might have.
Applications for our sub-allocated funds for last year. that have been sent off to DOH. We've been working with Lieutenant DOH on this project, moving this forward. I'm happy to report we have received a letter from DOH allowing us to proceed this project. Has been authorized, and in some cases authorized, with some stipulations. So there's a few projects that can be funded in there. Wayne County has the Heritage Farm, the Harvey Road connector, Access Road, environmental, and a couple projects for Huntington. And there was 10 total, so we're very excited that we can move forward on those. We're not out of the woods yet. The next step on those are going to be work with DOH and work with the local sponsors on developing a memorandum of agreement, a memorandum of understanding, whatever DOH would like to call it, we're fine with. But just to lay out those duties between Cuyahoga, the local project sponsor, and DOH. And once we get that in place, we'll get the official notice to proceed, and that is the buzzword notice to proceed. So that is, once you get that, that is when you can really start with the project. In the meantime, we'll be working with the local project sponsor to go ahead and start getting a consulting firm on board. You can start going through that process of hiring someone. We just can't sign the contract and have them start work until we get that notice to proceed. That's when we can do our happy dance, when we get the notice to proceed. That's a few months away. But moving forward. The next thing is, I'm sure our Ohio friends don't need to be told about this, but if you haven't been paying attention to any of the news in Ohio for the past couple months, Ohio recently passed House Bill 62, which was a transportation bill, but probably more commonly referred to as gas tax increase bill, whether you love it or hate it, it's the gas tax increase bill. So that bill actually led to a 10.5 cent increase per gallon on motor fuel, a 19 cent increase per gallon on diesel fuel. And it has a $200 fee on electric vehicles and a $100 fee on hybrid vehicles. So that was a lot of internal legislating going on in Columbus at the Ohio State House over that, between the House, Senate, and Governor's Office. And ultimately, the conference committee agreed to that, and the governor signed it. That was House Bill 62. So beginning July 1, for our Huntington and West Virginia friends that want to go over to South Point to get gas at Sam's, it's going to go up. So you know. But the flip side of that is the increase in revenue from the fuel tax is going to go to more transportation related projects.
Should be a smooth ride.
And it should be there. You notice all the reasons that you've been there in the last couple weeks, we've been paying the 252 as we speak. So for anyone in Ohio, especially the mayors in Ohio, or anyone that wants this, I can give it to you later. I combined a PDF so we had everything. There's a document that goes through every county and every township, village, or city in that. It just lays out what they're getting, what they will now be getting from the motor fuel tax. So I won't go through all of it unless things come up at pretty afterwards if somebody wants it. But each county from the motor fuel tax will get about $1.5 million more. It was about $2.4 million. And then with this bill being passed, there'll be about right around $4 million a year on the motor fuel tax to each county. And then I'm going to single out Ironton as the largest city in Morris County. So just from the motor fuel tax, that we're getting around $375,000 a year. Now they'll be getting $610,000 a year. So that's about a $235,000 increase.
Odd.
So certainly, you know, we're excited about the potential for additional transportation related projects in North County as a result of that. And then the next thing that I want to mention, and the last thing, is a new website. That's pretty bland and vague. And I just wanted to let everyone know that we are in the process of working with Bulldog Creative to build out a new website for Cuyahoga. In addition to the website, we work with them to get these brand new business cards. If you see those out front, we're very happy with the way those turned out. So we went ahead and worked with them. And that was one of the things that I got hired on, was wanting to beef up the website, not change the layout necessarily, just make it look better and more professional and more organized. They hadn't really had a big update in quite a while. So we were working with Bulldog Creative to completely revamp the website. And just add some new features that we don't have right now as well. Both of our next meeting in October, we'll have that up and ready for display. That concludes my executive director's report. Does anyone have any questions or comments, concerns, et cetera? The next item on the list, presentation of the final FY20 Unified Planning Work Program and Budget Documents. So that is this little beauty right here in your packet. And you've probably heard my spiel before on this, but this is, that is our Bible each fiscal year. So this is something that we do every single fiscal year, which begins July 1st of 2019 and runs to June 30th, 2020. So this document right here, I know Salim refers to it on a daily basis, and I refer to it at least on a weekly basis. But it lays out everything that we're going to be doing this year. It lays out our budget, it lays out our studies, it lays out our projects, it lays out some of our other responsibilities and relationships. It lays out everything. So this is the one thing that we have to have every year that tells us what we're doing for that year. It lays it all out. We approved the draft. The board approved the draft back in February. So upon that, we sent that draft to all of the state DOTs, the Federal Highway Administration, for any comments they may have. We have since revamped it, and now this is the final version that will get very bent up over the next year from use from here on our staff. This is the one thing that does not sit on the shelf. We do use this regularly.
From Burgess and Nyepel.
Go right ahead.
We're getting started. We're in the throes of a lot of data crunching right now and getting our head around the data. We did schedule the first stakeholder meeting for May 23rd, I believe it was. We'll probably be invited to that. So essentially, we're moving hot and heavy on it, and hopefully you had a chance to view the YouTube summary of some of the data we've uncovered.
Okay, thank you. Do we have anyone that has any questions whatsoever about that? It appears we have no questions for you today.
Okay, great. Have a great weekend.
Thank you for being available.
Yes, Dennis Simpson is on the phone.
Okay. You want to tell us something about
that? Yeah, real quick, I'll walk through what we've done since the last time we spoke. We've completed our review of existing information. We developed two build alternatives, a rehab option and a replacement option. We've identified all the environmental and permitting requirements that would be needed to construct either alternative. Developed a matrix. The alternative ranges from the rehab is $750,000, and the replacement is $1 million. We're in the stages of planning for a stakeholder meeting and public meeting on May 16th in the city of Huntington. And then we'll be wrapping up the report probably in late June.
Okay, does anybody have any questions about the Fifth Street West Bridge study? Hearing none, we want to thank you for being available for us today.
Thank you.
Next would be the Arlington Park Mobility Study. Dave Gilmore, are you on the phone?
This is James Yost for David Gilmore today.
Okay. Do you have anything you wanted to tell us?
Yeah, since we provided our last update, we finished and concluded all of our data collection. We've also done a self-performed intersection survey at Washington Boulevard and Route 60. We've then been able to summarize all the public input through our survey and through the public meetings. We developed recommendations based on short-term, midterm, and long-term, and we're now moving forward with the development of the draft. We hope to have that in front of the Cuyahoga representatives within the next week or so.
Okay. Do you have any questions? Hearing none, I want to thank you for being there for us today.
Of course, thank you.
Next, we have the City of Huntington Pavement Management Program, Jake Panther from Kimley Horn. Is Jake on the phone with us today? Is anybody on the phone from Kimley Horn to talk about the City of Huntington Pavement Program? Marshall University Bike Plan, Stevie Randolph with Edward Tucker, or maybe Bogan on the phone. Marshall University Bike Plan, is there anybody ready to talk about that? Okay, hearing none, we'll move on to the Milton Traffic Mobility Study. John Gallagher, Carpenter, Martin.
Hi, Gina Balsamo here from Carpenter Marty on behalf of John.
Okay, thank you. Do you have anything you want?
Yeah, sorry. We have completed our field observations, and some of our key findings from that are provided in John's presentation. We've also completed existing ADTs and future ADTs for the roadway segments that we had data for and figured out volume to capacity ratio for each one of those, and we have a public meeting scheduled for next week.
Okay, thank you. Does anybody have any questions? Seeing it all? Hearing none, well, we want to thank you for being on the phone today.
Thank you.
Lawrence County US 52 Interchange Justification. Steve Bergman?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, you have something to tell us?
Yeah, a quick update. I know I gave an update at the TAC meeting, but we have two short-term, and I want to highlight the term short-term safety solutions for Walmart Way and Charlie Creek. We've received funding for Walmart Way and are pursuing safety funding through ODOT for Charlie Creek, which will make, we believe, an immediate impact to that intersection in terms of alleviating some of the safety concerns that we've discovered. In the long term, we are looking at other strategies to separate the at-grade intersections from US 52. Those intersections are causing issues in terms of safety and congestion. So we are looking at a long-term solutions, which would include interchanges at key locations along that corridor of study. So that's a quick update. Thank you for the time.
Thank you. Does anybody here have any questions? Hearing none, thank you so much, Steve.
Thank you.
Next would be the Sandusky Road Study. Matt Stelford, are you on the phone with us today? Sandusky Road Study, is anybody on the phone today?
Thank you very much. We had a pleasure being here this afternoon, and probably between, not much between you and me. I guess the only thing between you all going home this afternoon, so I'll just be real brief. In your packet, you have a resolution that we hopefully The tax committee did recommend to this policy to the board. And there's just a couple of items that are in your packet of TIF-STIF amendments that we will move on to the state. And there are minor changes, and you can look at them yourself. If you have questions, we can ask Selenium or Terry or someone beyond that. So, any questions on the TIF-STIF? Okay, so the we'll need a motion to approve the TIF amendments as recommended by the tax
committee. Okay, at this time we need a motion to approve.
So moved.
Motion's been made.
Okay.
Has been seconded. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion carries.
Thank you. In addition to the TIP presentation, we did, a lot of these folks were not on the phone for these updates, but we did see full presentations at the TAC committee of these, and so we recommended all of those to come before the policy board. And if you ever, I know that we're trying to move things along a little quicker at these policy meetings, and so now we're referring everybody to the YouTube channel, but if you want, the TAC committee meetings are open to everybody that's on the policy if you want to get more down in the woods kind of a thing. The next thing that we kind of talked about was the transit systems update for both West Virginia and Kentucky, or all three of West Virginia, Kentucky, and Ohio. And it sounds like we're all in good shape, Michelle. You want to talk a little bit about Ashland? It sounds like we're getting bus shelters, maybe some buses, and running Saturday service now. It's very exciting.
We just started a first Saturday service. They're extending that into the weekend as a trial, and in the process of getting several bus shelters to help, you know, with being part rural area, updating our logo on our current buses so you can see them from a distance and then brand consistency, and it all looks really nice, as well as getting two new buses to swap out some of those that have seen better days.
That's exciting. One of the things that that we've done for the entire TMA, now the split letter is out, that's how we allocate the funds. Now, it used to be a letter that came from each governor, and now it comes to the TMA, and Cuyahoga, and TPA, and the bus systems send out that split letter. So that's out for approval to the three transportation systems, and they'll hopefully come to Cuyahoga. I hear from Ironton that they have purchased a parking lot. And one day it will be a maintenance facility, hopefully, in downtown Ironton. I don't see Ralph or Mike here, so that, I don't know much more than that, but they will start storing their buses on that parking lot. Hopefully, with future grants, they'll be able to build a maintenance facility. And as for TPA, we've had a lot of exciting things happening at TPA over the last several months. Completed our project at the downtown terminal, remodeling the 1950 model bathrooms. I know it's not a very big exciting thing, but if you're our customers every day, we get first-rate facilities now at our bus station. The other thing is that helping along with that, we should be all healthier, and the Paul Ambrose Trail, and the kind of working along with the city of Huntington to do the bike program we have installed, thanks to Cuyahoga. A bike rack at each bus shelter throughout the tri-state or our area, and there are 10 of those repair and pump stations spotted around the community. So if you're riding your bike, it will make it a lot easier to use, so we're really excited about that. So, did I miss anything about transportation? I think our ridership, brag about our ridership on that, we're at 4%. So we're really excited. We have two new buses that are being built currently in Gilead in Livermore, California. They should be delivered sometime in the fall. And under the community block grant now, the NCBG grant program, so it sounds like we're going to be able to get four more buses. It's a two-year build cycle, so we won't see those buses for 2 years. The last thing I have on my left is the 5310 program. And Terry gave me a really nice cheat sheet here right before the meeting started. We are on round five of the 5310 program. And you may recall the 5310 program is for the elderly and handicapped and trying to help those areas that may not necessarily be covered by fixed route bus or other services. And so we are applications opened on April 21st, 22nd. Staff here at Cuyahoga is available to discuss any questions that someone may have on May 6th. Letters of intent are due May 13th. And if the agency that's applying or intending to apply is applying for an expansion vehicle, then there's letters that go out to all the existing transit providers to say, you know, we don't want to do it. Okay? So everybody has to prove that, yes, there is a need. Then applications are due to Cuyahoga on June 28th, and shortly thereafter, we'll approve those things. And that's when PTA kind of takes over. So if there's vehicles and other things like that, we buy them, we purchase them, and make them available to the 5310 folks. So, all I have.
Thank you very much. We appreciate it. Next, we have 2019 Coordinated Public Transit Human Services Transportation Plan, and Terry Sicking from Iowa.
In your packet, you also have a document that has something similar to that. And this is our transportation, or we call it coordinated plan for sure, but that's just a mouthful. But I want to kind of piggyback on what Paul was talking about, is a 5310 applicant has to be a part of this plan. So it's essential that we have an updated plan on updated regularly so we can include all the new federal regulations and all the agencies. So ours, along with the state of West Virginia's, and was in the need of being updated. So West Virginia hired RLS to conduct the study and to complete the plan. Well, as we all know, us being the Cuyahoga, we don't just represent our West Virginia population. We have the urbanized portion of Ohio and William Grant County. So Cuyahoga took a step forward and actually secured them for a little bit of additional funds to complete the whole plan for the entire region. So the plan is complete. It has been out for a public review. What's included in the plan, it really is to address, identifies transportation needs of individuals with disabilities, seniors, and people with low incomes, provides strategies for meeting those needs, and prioritizes transportation services for funding and implementation through the FTA for the 5310 program, which is what Paul was talking about. And that is, I just read that, so that's the actual federal guidance language. I just want to make sure I got that straight so nobody can come back and say that. But it's a locally developed plan. We have to have a public input. It's required to have input from the populations that it actually serves. I think there were four meetings that RLS held and got a lot of input. There was a survey online. They went through a whole lot of different steps to make sure that they included everybody. But this also has to go out for public review in 30 days. The last day for public review is May the 21st. We need to have this approved pending no significant comments by the policy committee and up to May 21st. So once we come up to that date, if we have no comments, we would like to have the committee approve this pending, like I said, no significant comments, and we can move it on to West Virginia, DOT, and Cuyahoga, and have project, transit projects move.
Thank you. Now we have need a motion to approve the resolution. I think it's resolution number 13.
Your motion.
Motion's been made. Do I hear a second?
Second.
All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Moving on, we have federal state and local updates. Federal Highway Administration, Chandler English Smith.
Hi.
Hi,
everybody.
So, as you all know, we've been talking about transportation performance measures for a couple of years now. We have finally reached the point where all of the targets have been set by the state and the resolutions have been adopted by the state of West Virginia, or the MPOs in West Virginia, towards the state targets. So the next due date we have is that information, if there is amendment to an MPO's TIP or long-range plan, have to be amended into those plans on or after May 20th. So the MPO here has already started getting all that in and already amended it, so no problem with meeting that date, so we're in good shape, but just so you know that that's happening. Along with that, our Federal Highway TTM site has been updated, and as all of these targets and things are rolling in, they're being put up onto basically, it looks like the United States map. You click on a state, you can see what is being reported there, and if you click, and you can look at the other states that are surrounding or other areas and see what kind of targets they're setting as well. So it's not 100% done yet, obviously, because not all of the information is in there, but they're updating it as the information is in, you know, to make sure that it's there. And it should be really nice because it'll give everybody a place across the country to go and look and see what's happening in different places and update with it. The other thing I want to say is that we are 1 year away from the second PMA certification review. As you all remember, we did it back in 2016, so we're about a year away from the next one. It'll be happening April 2020, give or take March, April, that. So I don't think it was too bad the first go around. It should be easier this time, actually. But we'll start doing some organization on our part to get that scheduled. We can get all the FTA representatives here and all the FHWA representatives here, looking at everything. That will be next year. And then the other thing I'd like to talk about is that in the very end of March, beginning of April, I went to something called Freight Academy. It's put on by I-95 Corridor Coalition, and it's available for all public service employees. So MPO, Port Authority, Airport, County Commissioners, any of that, as long as you're a public servant of some sort. And it was probably one of the best things that I've ever gone to in my entire life. It is a very intense 6 day, like 7 in the morning till 8 o'clock at night, academy. There are a number of speakers. You also take a number of tours of different type of freight things. So we went on to the port of New York and New Jersey. We were actually down there watching them unload those ginormous cargo ships. And we got to tour food distributors, and we went to FedEx and saw how that worked and learned that they had shipped a dolphin the week before, which is amazing to me that that happened. So they usually do it about every 2 years or so, but I highly recommend that if you are in that sphere of working and you're interested in freight, that it's something to keep your eye on and think about attending. Very well done. Very well done. Highly recommend it. That's all I have.
Thank you, Chance. Thanks to the Tri-State Airport, and Brent Brown is out of town this weekend, isn't able to report. I serve as president of the Tri-State Airport Authority, and I would just like to kind of give you an update. We've been putting in the elevator building there, with the elevator that comes from the parking lot up to the main level. And the only thing we need to finish at this point in time is the cover that goes from the elevator to the airport. So we'll be able to park the car, get on the elevator, kind of stay in the cover, get into the airport. It's going to be great in the winter. And we're really excited about it. It's been a long time coming. West Virginia DOT and the West Virginia DOH.
We have concluded our public outreach efforts for our STIP development. We're currently in the process of waiting on our 45-day public comment period to conclude. I think that's going to end on May 15th. So after that, we'll just continue on that path of developing the new STIP. Secondly, was the build grants are open for application now for 2019. And we are exploring our options as to what we're going to apply for as a state. So if you all locally have anything that you all would like to apply for, I would recommend you work with Salim and he'll coordinate with us, and we'll keep doing what we do as far as applying for those. Project updates. It's only been about 4 weeks since our last meeting, so there hasn't really been a whole lot that's changed. Culloden and US 52 are still snagged up for the moment. Cloden Interchange. The interchange itself doesn't have any issues. It's the connector road, the Benedict Road, that would be tying into US 60. We were having some issues with negotiating with the railroad company because we're about to span the railroad, and I guess that's a big deal for them. US 52, they found Indian remains, so it's hard to tell. I'm not too familiar with the environmental process, but that seems like it might slow things down a little bit as well. Outside of that, we have the planning conference coming up next week, and a lot of Cuyahoga staff and RIG staff will be there and for some good times. Ready for the summer.
Okay, just a few things from central office that I wanted to mention. For one thing, we're working on our safety targets right now, getting those updated for 2020. And that's our Highway Safety Improvement Program staff and our Office of Highway Safety that are working on those. But we're probably going to see an increase in the targets for the number and rate of fatalities. And that's primarily just because of the way that it's calculated using a five-year moving average. And we had some exceptionally low fatality years that are moving out of the moving average. So that's really the primary reason that we're seeing that. But if anybody wants to provide comments on our targets, you know, you're welcome to contact the staff that are actually setting those. I can put you in contact with them if you want.
You know what? And if possible, in the next couple of years, you'll see an increase in the serious injury as well. They redefined what a serious injury is, so the crash reports are different now. And it's very possible that those numbers will go up because of a reclassification of what a serious So that's not necessarily that there are more anymore. It's just that they've redone the definition for it. So,
what's the definition for the serious injury?
What used to be classified as like we had a three tier. A was serious injury. B was non-capacity. Basically, it's non-life threatening. And then C was just a possible injury. And what they've done was basically combined a lot of confusion, really. Whenever you get a broken bone, a lot of them were getting coded as A's, so they made them, pushed them towards the B. Now they're moving them back to the A.
Okay.
So back in 2007, we saw a big decrease because they did that. They made it more difficult to be classified as a serious injury. But now they've moved it back up, so we're going to see that go down.
Okay. Thank you.
Hey,
thank you. Information. Well, actually, I had a couple more things from central office first. The SHIFT process where we're developing our new six-year highway plan, just wanted to mention that, you know, the MPO provided some projects back in March, I think it was, that they were interested in having us consider. We are in the process of scoring those, and we expect to release the scores by late June. And then at that point, we'll come back to the MPO and ask them to provide priority points for those projects to help the higher priority projects for the area move forward. The other thing I wanted to mention is that we're starting to work on a statewide corridor plan, and I don't have many details on that at all at this point, but the idea is that we're going to be looking at things from a corridor level rather than a project level, and that's something we intend to work very closely with the MPOs on going forward, with the idea that we'll have this finished in a year or two, and that'll feed into the next six-year highway plan. And that's all I had from central office. And as far as District 9 goes, nobody from the district could be here today, but there's a sheet in your packet that provides information on the Boyd and Greenwich County projects. And I don't want to go through every project, but just because I don't really know that much about them, the district is kind of the expert on those. But I will say a few things. As far as Boyd County goes, improving US 60 from I-64 at the interchange 181 to the Kentucky 180 intersection, that one they're hoping for an August 2019 construction letting. There's another one addressing the pavement condition on I-64. That's projected for a May 20th construction letting. So that's that they'll probably have some significant impacts for those traveling through that area. And there's also a planning study we're doing on Rushock Road, and they're expecting to have that completed by the summer of 2019. In Greenup County, another few more things I wanted to mention. The Kentucky 224 Bridge, the Russell Viaduct, that's scheduled for a July letting. A couple sidewalk projects, the Russell Safe Routes to School project, they're anticipating a summer letting, and so the Flatwoods sidewalks on Powell Lane, they're also they're expecting a fall letting for that one. Then a couple projects have already been awarded, and these are bridge replacement projects where we could get a closure up to 60 days, but those are the bridges over Pond Run on Williams Avenue and Graceland, and also Musketeer Drive over Slash Branch. So just a few things I wanted to mention. Like I say, if you have any questions, the district office would probably be better than me to answer those, but any questions or complaints, I'll be happy to pass those on.
Okay, thank you very much. Does anybody have any questions? If not, we'll move on to Lawrence County. Patrick Lighting.
Well, we got a few different types of projects going on. We have a resurfacing project. We're resurfacing Power Lane, 3.5 miles. We have County Roads, 7.5 miles. So the County Road 15 and 18. That construction will start Monday, which will be fun, because where they're doing all the work on US-52, some people are using that as the yellow ramp. So, but it's been done in two pools. So it will be open. I don't know if they may start top one first. I'll anticipate 18. Then we have our interchange projects. We have US-52 Solid Road, Collins Avenue. We're in the punch list stage right now. They should be working next week. A couple guys doing the punch list on that to get that closed out. The County Road 410 project, which is a Walmart Way, that's kind of determined right now because of where they're doing so much of different projects with the green tea. Right now it's still scheduled for fiscal year 2021. Then we have the US-52 State Route 243 interchange. We do have a project that's ready to go into the design build project. Right now we're just trying to cement the rest of our local funds. Probably looking at fiscal year 2021 on that.
It's a double roundabout at the exit.
That will be a double roundabout. It's asphalt pavement, so it won't be as bad as the Solver Road, which was concrete, where you have to shut everything down. And, you know, we can build it in phases. We also have bridge project, County Road 10A. That bridge replacement, we're working on contracts right now. So that's a 100-foot long span, 24-foot wide face to face. We're looking at $1 million construction cost. Also, the County Road 104 bridge, that's roughly the same length. They're built about the same time, both funding trusses. So that one is fiscal year 2023. And then we have some landslide projects. We have two on County Road 2. One at the 1 mile mark. That's out for bid right now. Those two projects, about $850,000 for those two projects. The other one's under design. I can't do them at the same time anyways, because they might end up landlocking. So I'm just kind of floating through the design on another one once another one. What's this first one stuff?
The roundabout at Top Point, I don't know if you've had a chance to go down there and around the loop. It's been relatively popular. Surprisingly popular after
We took a lot of heat during the construction and prior to construction, and the day that people found out that their tank was closed and tried to sign petitions to stop it or whatever. They called in asking if that could be done. I said, well, I think you're too late now. And we had public meetings at the end of Boise City Council. But we took a lot of heat during that time period. We got it completed. I shouldn't say completed, but opened up. Had substantial completion. And got it opened up on January 4th. Now, prior to that intersection, you had two phases. You had some safety and some queuing back going towards the industrial park. They were having the fleet go there at least once a week for crashes. We're still waiting for the first report of the accident. So we haven't had it yet. We know it will come.
It was just amazing to me, kind of watching, the comments on some of the Facebook posts from there, the brief before it all, and all of the gloom and doom. But the interesting thing to me, just from the buzz in the community, is one, that everybody likes the roundabout, and two, the people in Coal Grove, just regular people in Coal Grove, like, when can we get the roundabout at our tank? We really need one there.
Yeah, so, and there's people that don't even know that we have a project already in the hoppers on that. And they're like, Hope really needs one of those off of 243. They're like, well, we're working on money right now.
And the reason I point that out, for those of you in different communities that may have a design plan that comes up with a roundabout, it's been amazingly well received. Once it all, now before we all that you have, the comments, but it was quite interesting, but very colorful, you might imagine.
Most of them revolt about people were going to take their lawn chairs out there to watch
them. I did try to make a left turn on it, which didn't work at all. It's sweet.
Clockwise, not counterclockwise.
It's just slide right into it.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate that. Is there anything under old business for today? Old business. Hearing none, we'll move on to new business. New business would be the new meeting dates coming up, one October 4th, and that will be in Lawrence County, but the location is to be announced. And December 6th, we will have a meeting on Friday, but we don't know where yet. Okay. Is there anything else to come before the meeting today? Anybody have anything at all?
Chairman, I'd like to say, I think Chris and the staff, Liz and Danielle, the audit, no finding, everything's clear, and we ought to give them a hand.
Yeah.
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 Thank you.